Adversity, bring it. The struggle, I welcome it. Snooze on life, never that. I am Dave Regina, and this is the No Snooze Podcast. Come on. Welcome back, No Snooze Podcast, episode 179. As always, I'm in the booth with a new three. We have Austin, the insurance guy, Glazer, Claudio, the voice, Valenzuela, and I am Dave, the body, Regina. Austin, the insurance guy, Glazer, is a dynamic entrepreneur who swiftly climbed the ranks in corporate America to become one of the nation's top 10 producing agents within a renowned captive insurance company, boasting a property and casualty insurance book of close to $5 million. Fueled by a relentless pursuit of his dreams, Austin launched Safe Shield Insurance, a full-service brokerage breaking free from corporate constraints to amplify his brand tenfold. Despite overcoming major adversity at a young age, Austin is a self-made success story, excelling not only in insurance, but also as a real estate investor, sales trainer, and keynote speaker. His journey epitomizes the spirit of entrepreneurship, resilience, and inspiring others to follow their passions in the business world. Austin Glazer, welcome to the podcast, my brother.
Dave, thanks for having me. That was so beautiful. that was almost like I couldn't have written that any better. How's it going?
Very good, my brother. Very good. We got to start with the text message from the morning.
That's what you want to go with?
That was elite. So, okay. So, you know, Austin and I had connected a couple weeks back. We set the date and, you know, I said a time. And it was an agreed upon time.
Absolutely.
So an hour prior to our podcast this morning, I typically send a text out to the guest, NCV, just saying, good morning. You know, anybody want some caffeine?
Mm-hmm.
Right? So Austin hits me back and he's like, you know, the podcast is in 4 hours, right? And I was like, no, my brother, it's in an hour.
You know, the craziest thing about that, though, is that is so not me. For anybody who knows me, like outside of this episode, like I am so like fueled by my calendar. And mm-hmm. What must have happened is I saw your DM. I put it on the calendar and somehow I messed up. And the craziest thing was I was at the gym. I'm at the gym every day at 5 o'clock in the morning. But like, I was like, I got time to kill today. Like I got nothing to do. Like the morning's free. Cause I got to be here by 12:30. Like I'm good, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm running and you guys send that text. And the crazy thing was before I got that text, I was going to send you a text and be like, hey man, can't wait to see you later. See you at 12:30. And I was like, nah, the guy's going to think I'm annoying if I send this text. Like I'm not going to send it. And I got news. If you guys didn't send that text message, I wouldn't be here right now. So I just want to say thank you for sending that text message because I am here and I am happy to be here.
Yeah, no, listen, man, I'm happy to have you. One thing I could tell very early on is my first time meeting you.
Yeah.
Very appreciative of your energy, man.
Thanks.
You know, some people, they come in and, you know, when you're meeting for the first time, you're not really sure of the energy. So I welcome your energy. I'm excited to have this conversation. Before we get started, we're going to go all over the place. I got to tell you guys a funny story this morning, right? You mentioned the gym. So I'm in the gym every morning as well. And now I'm at 24-Hour Fitness where we have a, is this weird? We have a co-ed sauna.
That is super weird.
It's kind of strange.
I might join the gym. That's kind of crazy though.
Well, so, you know, sometimes you get the young looking males and females totally. And then sometimes you get the older males and females. So it works both ways.
I can't believe that's a thing. Like,
yeah. So like
they're just throwing it out there. Like it's not a crazy thing. That's nuts.
So that's one, right?
Okay.
But the thing about me is I am very competitive in my life. I love community. I love collaboration, but I'm also a competitive individual. I'll compete against Ed, the strongest man in the room. I'll compete against my daughter, who's 3.5. I will compete against my grandmother, God rest her soul.
Okay.
Okay. So whenever I'm in the sauna, I do 25 to 30 minutes of a session. But if somebody else walks in the sauna, now I feel obligated mm-hmm. to stay in even longer. So if you're on YouTube, you might notice that I'm a little bit red because I'm so dehydrated because this woman came into the sauna at minute 28.
Oh, man.
And she stayed a full like 25 minutes. So I did an hour in the sauna, and I still beat her. But the second that she walked out, I ran out right behind her. Is that bad that I'm competing against, I don't know, she had to be 60 years old.
You know, it's funny that you say that. So as I told you, when you sent that text message, it's funny how this all ties together. You sent that text message, and I had like one more mile to go on the treadmill, and then I was going to go in the sauna. And one of my pet peeves, so I just joined Lifetime in Stamford. Beautiful place.
Country club.
Literally country club. Beautiful. So it opened. So I get there. I'm on my last mile, and I'm about to go in the sauna for like 20 to 30 minutes. But the problem is there's no service in the sauna. So if I had sat in there for 30 minutes, I would have had no service. I would not have seen your text, and I wouldn't have been here. So you caught me at like literally the perfect time. Yeah, craziest thing ever.
Beautiful. And you look very well put together.
Thank you.
Proud of you, man. This is
Thanks. I'm proud of me too.
Yeah, and it was very funny, man. He we get a lot of acknowledgement on the setup down here.
Yeah.
But Austin came in with some fiery energy for CV. CV loves to hear this stuff. So,
let me stare into the camera and tell you guys about this. This is the craziest place I have ever been in my whole life. It is the most unsuspecting studio, but like this would give like Warner Brothers and Fox a run for its money. Like, this is the craziest place I've ever been. Like, I can't even believe I'm on this podcast. I feel like now, barring it, like everything else I've done in life is irrelevant. Like, this is my peak. So pumped.
Listen, and that is not a paid ad.
Okay? No, it's not. This is just like straight up. It is. You guys got to come here. It's fantastic.
Let's talk about you. So unless my research is wrong, you're originally from Florida.
So I lived in Florida for a little bit. Funny, how'd you know that? What you did your research.
So one thing about me, just in business, podcast, like I treat this podcast like a business, right?
Sure.
But also, like, if I'm connecting with individuals, I do research.
Yeah.
You know, so like just through Instagram, basic stuff. But yeah, like it really takes 10 minutes totally to get to know what somebody's about.
100%.
And like check their story out and honestly see if I want you on the podcast.
Totally.
You know what I mean? So everything really did align. So yes, I happen to know that you're from.
Well, so I'm from Long Island. I lived there till I was in eighth grade, and then I did 2 years in Florida.
Gotcha.
And then I have a story, we can get into it at some point, but my mom passed away, and my aunt and uncle took me in Westchester. They adopted me, and then I went to Westchester, and now here I am in Stanford. That's the super quickest version of it.
Yeah. So again, you know, and in your bio, you speak about adversity at a young age.
Sure.
Right? So we got to start there because, you know, I'm all about overcoming and, you know, knocking down the walls that
Absolutely.
Are in front of you, the things that are supposed to hold you back in life should become fuel to your fire.
Totally.
Your story is an incredible one, obviously, with your mother. So let's start there.
Yeah. And, you know, before we jump in, like one thing I always want to add is like to people at home, like you need to understand like sort of what you said, like your story, like is your story. Right. And it's like we were saying earlier before we went live, like everybody has a story. But what I think is so powerful is that those who tell it well. Right? Because that's what makes you who you are, right? I'm wearing a blue blazer today because that's the color of Safe Shield and that's my brand. But my brand is also the kid whose mom died at 16 and had to figure it out, right? Like I'm that kid who was self-made and created my own opportunity. And I think that it's so important for everybody at home to understand that and channel their story and tell it to as many people as they can because it'll help them reach the next level. So with that being said, my story is I grew up in Long Island, New York. You know, good upper class, upper middle class family. My father owned an appliance store in Brooklyn. My mom was pretty much a stay-at-home mom. I have an older brother and an older sister. And right around 2008, 2009, my father's business wasn't doing well. It went out of business and we basically ran out of money. Unfortunately, there was not a ton of financial intelligence there with like future planning, and we didn't have any money when that happened. So overnight, we sort of moved to Florida, sold our house like at a loss because they were like, we just got to get out of here. We can't afford this. We went from living in a very nice house with 8-9 cars at a time like to Florida. And one side note that I'll tell you is the craziest thing that I learned through that time was financial intelligence, right? There was no financial planning. There was, let's buy this custom S-Class Mercedes and this Range Rover and this Hummer. And it's like, there's only three drivers. Why do we have 7 cars, right? But that was the reality that I lived for a really long time. My family tried to be keeping up with the Joneses. And that was a really crazy thing. So when we moved to Florida and ran out of money, we went from having all those nice things to living in a rented home that was like 1,000 square feet, maybe less. And we went from driving, you know, custom Mercedeses to 2 leased Hyundais, which I love Hyundais. But at the time, the way I was brought up, like we were made to believe that Hyundais weren't good cars because we were so used to those statusy brands. Okay. So that was a really like big shift in my life. I went from having so many friends in Long Island, New York. I was the typical Long Island Jewish kid. I went to sleepaway camp. I did everything. I had, my mother made sure that I had everything and I had the best life I could ever ask for. But it was almost to a fault because it was like, that ruined me a little bit. When I went to Florida, my life changed because I wasn't that kid anymore. Now I'm coming there in ninth grade to Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Florida, which has 4,000 or 5,000 kids.
Where in Florida?
Parkland, Florida.
Parkland.
Okay. So if you're familiar with where that shooting was a couple of years ago, like it's where I went to high school.
Oh, wow.
So really crazy. Like I moved there like as the new kid with like no friends. Like now we have no statusy things. And truly I had no confidence. I was a weird little kid in ninth grade, but I was social. I played lacrosse. I've always had this energy, but like people used to think it was weird. Now I have something to channel them into. So the reality was when we moved there, my mom got a job. She was working at Macy's. Turned out she was a killer salesperson, which is an awesome memory that I have of her. She had just lost like 150 pounds, was in amazing shape, like really was on top of the world. My father bought a shipping store. It was called Mr. Shipper. I'll never forget. I used to build the website and I would work there like 2-3 days a week. And it was crazy because one day, and also while we were in Florida, the one really great thing that happened is I was not making a lot of friends. But the reality was, is my grandpa Ronnie and my grandma Estelle, my mom's parents, they lived in Boca, which was about 20 minutes away. So I got so close with them. And may they both rest in peace. They were my favorite people of all time. But, you know, within a year and a half of living there, my mom was complaining. She had very bad headaches. And if you knew me, my mom did everything for me. I was literally like the most, here is everything you need, Austin, on a golden platter, okay? And the reality was, is she went to a doctor and they gave her 3 months to live. She had a terminal form of brain cancer and they basically said, say your goodbyes. And it was a very traumatic time. You know, at the time I had a girlfriend. We were dating for about 6 months. And I mean, just imagine like being someone's boyfriend or girlfriend and then hearing that news and you're only with them for 5 or 6 months. Like I know that I was so much to that girl and she was incredible. Her family was incredible, what they did, and they helped me through that. But it was around that time when my mom got sick that my father was just like, I don't want to do this. Like, I don't want to be here. I don't want to be a part of this. Like, I can't. I'm not fit. Now, he didn't outwardly say that he couldn't do these things, but it was evident, right? Because right as my mom was, because, you know, what are they going to do? Chemo? You got 3 months to live. You're not beating this. Go live out your final days. You know what I mean?
So they opted not to do
so chemo? We did some treatments and fortunately, we didn't have any money, but fortunately, you know, my mom's brothers are super successful and they paid for the treatments. Which were sort of like, you know, last resort, which is a crazy concept. My mom got really like, what's the word I'm looking for? Like she like didn't want anyone to know. Like she, my mom was a tough motherfucker. Can I curse on this thing?
Absolutely.
She was a tough motherfucker. Like she would, like if you knew Ava Glazer, man, she was tough. Like she drove an H2 Hummer with license plates that said Ava. She was a loud personality, a lot like me. Wore sunglasses inside, and she was tough. And but she, the problem was she wasn't able to be as tough anymore because when that brain cancer is eating at you, you're losing your ability to be you.
What, and sorry to cut you
no,
off.
No, that's okay.
What form of
Geoblastoma.
Dude, so you're friends with Francis
I'm
Foley.
Really close with Fran.
That's yeah, crazy because but, you guys
yeah,
have the
both
same.
Terminal, yeah, I
yeah,
know.
But same form yeah, of exa- rare yeah, cancer
both,
too,
exact
right?
Same.
Jesus Christ.
I'm really close with Fran. Actually, yeah. I'm shooting a video of Fran on Sunday. I talk to Fran at least once a week usually. Mm-hmm. Fran and I, when he was going through that, like I made sure I went to the funeral, like, all my events that I do for Connect CTMY, which we'll talk about later, like they're all for glioblastoma. Like I always donate the money and like whatever I can. But you know, segueing back, when my mom got sick, she basically went to live with my grandparents. My dad was still in the picture, but like he just like didn't want to care for her. It was very strange in retrospect. I'll never know why she went and lived there. They had like a live-in aide at my grandparents, and my grandparents were old. They were like 85 years old, and like now they're taking care of my mom, and there's an aide, and like. It got bad. Like my dad like never went and visited her. He was like having his own life. I'll never forget. So when I was living in Florida, I've never told this story publicly, but I am me. And I think my story is my brand, right? And I was really into smoking pot at the time. And I have nothing against pot, but when I was that age, I was doing too much of it. And I had this bong, right? And my dad found the bong. And it was like the one time he decided to be a parent. And he took the bong from me and he goes, I'm taking your car. And I go, I want to go see mom. And he goes, you better figure out another way. And I was like, that's so crazy. Like my mom has 2 to 3 months left and you're just doing this. I'll never forget. I rode my bike like 35 miles. I was not in shape as a high school kid. I was like, I was fine. I was like 160 pounds, but I wasn't like cut up or strong. And I rode my bike like 20, 30 miles. Now that's a stretch probably, but I rode my bike to go.
Makes the story better.
Yeah, it does. You know, as you get older, you add the miles. In 10 years, it'll be 100 miles. So I went to tell my mom on the bike and, you know, she was so like bitter towards the end. And that was really sad because that's just who she was. And, you know, I'll never forget. It was a Sunday morning when she did pass. She was in hospice where like it was called Hospice by the Sea. It was a fucking beautiful hospice place, which I guess those are like oxymorons, you know? Like, yeah, there's no such thing as a beautiful hospice place. But it was really nice. I'll never forget. I was going to work with my dad at his store, Mr. Shipper. And we went outside, or sorry, this was Saturday night. I held her hand. My dad went outside. He was like, was leaving. And I said, it's okay to go. I go, I don't know how, but I'm going to figure this out. And I got chills just now saying, almost like she's hearing me as I said that. But I said that to her and I held her hand and I said, good night. I love you. And she was not auditory at this point, like non-vocal. So, you know, she didn't say, yeah, I love you too. She was like in a coma. I don't know if a coma is the right word. Nonetheless, we came back the next morning at Sunday. She had passed. And I was the final person to have spoken to her and said that. And I am without a doubt certain after all these years that that was her. Okay. I don't need to fight. I'm ready to go. He's got this. So that's just the beginning of my story, right? Mm-hmm. And I know I'm talking long-winded. I'm almost there. Am I talking too much? Or
listen, man, you're the... So the good thing about the podcast, right,
yeah,
is we take ordinary people,
yeah,
with extraordinary stories.
Yeah.
I will never stop you from telling your story.
Oh, there's more.
No, we want to hear...
Now it gets
bad. we want to hear all of it because... Yeah. But again, man, don't... You're stepping into your story. And
sure.
You know, you tell your story incredible.
Thank you.
This is my podcast, CB's podcast, but we're here to shine the light on you.
Yeah.
And your story. So I'll cut you off if I want to cut you off.
Okay.
But keep going, because this is amazing.
So my mom passes away, and now it's like, shit, hits the fan. And at this time, my sister had been living with us in Florida. There's like, she was living there. And like overnight, like my dad like changed, right? Like he just like... Obviously, that time period was very sad. We all knew that of all the people that my brother, my brother is like 12 years old and my sister's 9 years older. So they're like adults at this time. I'm 16, by the way, at this time. I have not put that out there, but I was 16 at this time in my life. Very pivotal time in your life to have like such a major life thing happen. Yeah. So this happens. And within like 3 weeks, my dad is like having this woman move into our house. And I'm like, what's going on here? You know, like, what the hell is this? And I was like, yo, you're not having her live here. Like, there's no way. And listen, there's always two sides to every story. Mm-hmm. This is one side of the story. And I'm pretty damn sure it's 100% accurate because I lived it. But I would say to him, you're not having to live here. And it got super like physical and like abusive. And then one day I just said, fuck this. And I took a backpack full of shit. I'll never forget. I don't know where I thought I was going. I walked out of the house and I left. I went and lived with a family friend for like 4 days. He called the cops and he's like, you ran away. And I'm like, yeah. Like, why would I stay there? And like, that is an unfit environment for a child who just lost their kid. Like, you're having a woman move in that I've never met. You were married to my mom for 35 years. Like, this is crazy. You guys got married at 18. Like, how are you doing this? You know what I mean? So he like chose the woman over me. So for a very short period of time, I wasn't going to live with like my family friend, or really my friend. Then, my two uncles, I have three uncles on my mom's side. I have a very close knit family on my mom's side. They got involved and they were like, all right, we got to figure this shit out. So I went and lived with like my mom's best friend who lived in Florida for a bit. We've known her whole life. Shit got crazy because within 2 months of living, like I was literally like finally finding some like good shit in my life. Like I was starting to have like that, like, all right, things are good. You know what I mean? Like I'm finding a routine. I'm comfortable. I have a girlfriend. Like I sort of have a family again. And then one night I had this really bad pain in my stomach and my appendix burst. So the people I was living with at the time, they took me to the hospital and I went in. And when I came out, like I remember the woman who I was living with, she was like, your father keeps calling the hospital. Like, this was like a super turbulent time. Like before that happened, like there'd be days where I'd show up to school and I'd park my car. Like we were talking about getting up early and going to the gym. Like I always would park my car in the first spot in the parking lot. Like that was my thing. I loved that shit. I can't believe I did that. But like that was something I did. One day I came out of school, my car was gone and my phone was turned off. And the lady I was living with at the time was like, your father came, took the car, turned your phone off. So you wouldn't be able to contact me if you wanted. So it was super like, I'll one up you type of shit. Mm-hmm. And was just trying to make my life hell. And this is like 3 months removed from my mom passing away and not knowing how to do anything. So then I go in for the appendix surgery. I come out from the surgery. She's gone. Like she's like, I'm getting wheeled out by my great uncle Harvey, my grandfather's brother. They're both wheeling me out. And they're like, listen. And at the time, Harvey's 75 years old. He goes, listen, Robin doesn't want you there anymore. We're going to figure something out. Like, we think we're going to put you with grandpa for now. And I go, all right. Like, just like another, like, let's do it. Like, I'll fucking do it. You know, what? You can't kill me. You can't fucking kill me. So I go and live with my grandfather within the first day. And this should just show the character that he had. He gave me a car, took me to AT&T within 10 minutes of getting there. Got me a phone. This was before the appendix. I forgot about this little piece. But he took me, got a car, got a phone within 10 minutes. Like, he's like, we're not going to let you live like this. This is what your mom would want. So then the appendix happens. I go live with my grandfather. It was at this time in my life that I really was starting to go down a really bad path. I was smoking pot every day. I didn't know what my purpose was in life. And I'll never forget this. My cousin Lyle, hopefully he listens. I doubt he listens, but maybe he does. I'd like for him to listen. Lyle, if you're listening, I'm very thankful for you. I'll never forget. So every Christmas in Florida, like, all of my family would come down because my great uncle Harvey's house and my grandfather Ronnie, they lived within 0.1 miles together in Boca.
Hold on. So the Jewish family is coming down for Christmas?
Every year.
What's going on?
So every, well, oh yeah, well, what are we going to do? We can't celebrate Christmas, so we're going to have Chinese food together.
okay.
What are we kidding here?
Got you.
So, no, we put in like a Jewish, you know, gated community, yeah. Golf, you know, Chinese
food. My family's Jewish as well.
Oh, phenomenal. L'chaim. So the crazy thing was, is that, you know, we all are sitting there and we're sitting on this rocking thing that nobody had probably sat in like 10 years. And we're having this conversation and we're smoking a joint together. And he goes, so like, what are you doing? And he's like 2 years older than me. And I go, dude, I don't know. And I broke down. And that combined with my cousin Eric, who's one of my partners on those multis that I was telling you about, he had hid one of my pot vapes because he's like, you're doing this in grandma and grandpa's house. Like, you're going to get in trouble. And it was at that time that I realized that, like, I needed to make a change. I needed to do something. I needed to fix my life. Now, like I said, I'm super fortunate on my mom's side to have as great of a family as I do. They're all super successful. So I called my uncle Lane, actually, in DC, and I said, can I come live with you? He said, sure, but you're going to go live with Carrie instead. And my uncle Carrie lives in Westchester. And if you knew my uncle Carrie, I would love for him to listen. There's no way he's going to listen, though. But if he happens to be listening, the off chance, we had a conversation. And if you know him, he's super tough on me. He was really, really tough on me. He says, if you come live with me, I want you to understand something. You're not my kid. You're my nephew. I'll adopt you. I'll give you food and I'll give you shelter. But the rest you're going to figure out. And boy, do you have a lot to figure out, because I don't baby my kids like your mom did to you.
Wow.
I said, fuck it. I'm game. I broke up with my girlfriend who I'd been with for a year and a half, who went through all that hardship with me. And I moved to Westchester. And then almost immediately, I got a job. I was working at a convenience store, then a pizza place, then a delivery place. Dude, I did everything. I had like 10 to 15 jobs.
How old were you at this time? 17?
This was all when I was 16.
So, okay, wow.
Dude, literally all within the span of 6 months, this all happened. Like, it was the craziest time of my life.
Yeah, for sure.
And then I moved here and, yeah, I lived here. And it wasn't easy when I lived here. Like, I was, you know, I still believe, I love my family, but I think there's a degree of, I'm still treated a little bit like the redheaded stepchild. They still haven't fully, like, Molly and Sam, who've my two adopted brothers and sisters now, I love them. They're like brother and sister, but you know, there's still that degree of I'm only a nephew. But listen, that's the hardship I overcame. Mm-hmm. And I mean, man, what an action packed 6 months.
What an action packed story. This is.
Well, and then one final thing, we'll talk the rest of my story later, but my dad's been married 5 times since, four of his wives have died. One divorced. So he's continuing on his path.
You guys don't talk.
No, we don't talk. Yeah. Matter of fact, I hope he sees this. You fucked up, Bruce. But there you go. That's my story. He calls me every now and again, but the reality is, listen, screw me once, shame on you. Screw me twice, shame on me. Screw me once, screw me 3 times. You're just fucked. That's it. You're cut off.
Yeah.
So that's my story. Don't worry about.
Yeah, man. Well, thank you obviously for, you know, the vulnerability and sharing all that stuff. A lot of pivotal moments,
totally,
man, in such a short time frame too.
Yeah.
I wanna unpack it a little bit.
Yeah.
And I guess I'm just trying to decide where to start. So what did you, I guess I'll go to the hardest part. What did you learn now from your father being the way that he was, to make you kind of the man that you are now?
Well, that's a great question, Dave. And I think that, like, the hardest thing, right, is your parents are the biggest people that shape you into who you are, right? And may my mom rest in peace, and my father, whatever he's up to, like, I do wish the best for him, okay? I don't wish poorly on anyone. Mm-hmm. But not just my father, but one of the biggest things that I struggle with is, like, I never want to be in a financial position where, like, I am living trying to be keeping up with the Joneses. That was a very big lesson. And I think that was more my dad than my mom. My mom was not great either. She, you know, carried Louis Vuitton purses and had like 15 to 20 purses, a lot of jewelry. And like honestly, like, that was a really big lesson for me. in addition to that, like trying to be more selfless instead of selfish. And that's a struggle because, Dave, when you go through like the life I've had, it's been pretty much me. Mm-hmm. Like, sure, my family took me in, but they had their own lives. Like, you know, and my brother and my sister, I'm not super close with them. Right. So it's like, it's been me, like the little wins that I've had, like I accomplished them. Right. I built a business. I've done some incredible things. And it's really hard to not be selfish about that and want to talk about it and do your own thing. So it's really hard for me to, like, you know, we talk and like, I'm single. Right. And one of the biggest issues I have is becoming vulnerable with someone and sharing that appreciation for them and what they've done, because I saw in that span of 6 months that it can all be taken away from you and you sort of have to rebuild. So I've learned through that all, though, that like not everybody's perfect. Mm-hmm. And the number one lesson I have is that everybody gets dealt a bad hand, but it's how you play those hands. I've seen people win a hand of poker with two twos or two mm-hmm. Hand of Texas Hold'em with two twos, right? Because they know how to bullshit everybody and they know how to make it to the top and fool yeah. everybody until they're at the top. And that's the biggest lesson I learned, is how to play your cards.
I love that, man.
Thanks.
This episode is brought to you by Hudson Valley Teeth Whitening. Hudson Valley Teeth Whitening is an experienced teeth whitening salon where you can get up to 7 shades lighter with just a 60 or 90 minute session in a professional and relaxing setting. They offer the most superior product coupled with the highest quality of customer service available to get you instant results. Whether you have an important event to attend, such as a wedding, birthday, anniversary, interview, or you are just unhappy with the color of your teeth, this LED light technology helps whiten your teeth fast and easy. At Hudson Valley Teeth Whitening, they understand how important your smile is to you. And speaking from personal experience, you'll be guided by highly efficient staff in a relaxing environment to reach your desired shade. Let them know you're a friend of Dave's from the No Snooze podcast and connect with them at HudsonValleyTeethWhitening.com or on Instagram at HVTeethWhitening. Now back to the epi. So this, I guess, starts your journey from undesirable
to ungoddamn deniable
to undeniable.
Yeah,
right. And it's ironic because every year I choose a word for the year.
Okay.
And my first episode this year was basically on me choosing my word for 2024, and my word happened to be undeniable.
Okay.
I want to be undeniable in everything I do. Right?
Sure.
Undeniable in my relationships. Undeniable in business. Undeniable as a father. Undeniable with the impact that I provide to others, undeniable yeah. with my encouragement, undeniable with the way I treat my body and the way that I treat others. Right. So how did you take your story and begin to turn it into something that now you're utilizing as this is your fuel now?
Yeah.
You know, and this is your livelihood
and
your energy. I can see how you have this energy now, right? Because that story can either make or break you. You've totally. Decided to allow it to, you know, you fully embraced it, but now you've overcome it. And I'm sure you're still like that challenge that you just said, that actually really resonated with me, you know, where you're struggling to be vulnerable because you saw everything ripped away. I think that's a very powerful.
I feel like I'm having a therapy session.
It's a very, right. No, but it's a powerful statement, man. And we just did that ACE Summit, Action Cultivates Excellence, where sure. we have one of our pillars of that platform. It's called VBDs, Vulnerability Breakthrough Developments, where we get together as men and we just let it all out.
Yeah.
You know, and it was some of the most impactful conversations. You see grown, big, strong motherfucking men break down crying because of our stories, right? Mm-hmm. So take me through that journey of becoming undesirable to undeniable.
Sure. So first, before, I don't know if there's any wrestling fans out there, but Cody Rhodes, WWE, he has an incredible story, and I have never told this on record. I stole that from him. He said, I went from undesirable to ungoddamn deniable, and boy, did he ever. But my story from undesirable to undeniable, I mean, you've heard the undesirable, right? Nobody mm-hmm. wanted me. Nobody wanted to live with me, right? But the reality is that when I came here, I knew it was up to me to make an impact. And that took time, right? Because I realized that I had no money. Like, I know it was going to bankroll me. So it all really started, like, when I was doing all these delivery jobs, right? And I started to realize that, like, I can make some money. Like, and I was in college. My uncle did tell me one thing: you have to go to college. He goes, you have to take the loans. You have to go. You need that piece of paper. Okay. So I went to college and I'm literally working, Dave, 6 jobs. Okay. Like, I am, there was this textbook startup where basically at the end and beginning of every semester, you could buy textbooks from people. I was a terrible student. So I would hang out in the library, not to study, but to buy textbooks from people and sell them. And I'd make a vig on that, right? So I was doing that. I was working for the Oswego Telefund, where basically I'd cold call alumni and I would basically get them to give money. I did so many things. I worked for an advertising company. I was selling ad space, right? Through this journey, though, I realized I was really good at sales. I was really, really good at talking to people because I just love to talk. So I went on my computer and I applied to literally like 100 different internships and nobody called me. I told my brother Adam, one of the companies I applied to, and I think I can go on record now and sort of say it. I've never name dropped the company, but you can look me up so easily. It's Liberty Mutual. That's where I used to work. And my brother works there. He's like one of the biggest the company's ever seen, probably going to be a Hall of Famer pretty soon. And I told him that I applied there and they didn't call me. And he said, "You're a fucking idiot." He goes, "Why would you not use my name?" He goes, "Do you know who I am?" I go, "No, I don't want to do it myself." He goes, "Do me a favor." He goes, "I'll put your foot in the door, but you can kick it in. Just please go apply again." I did that and they called me. The only one that called me though was in Trumbull, Connecticut. And I was living in Harrison, New York. It's an hour away. So I came home from school that summer and I interned for Liberty Mutual and I would cold call every day, like 100 cold calls. It was so boring. But there was another intern at that time, and you talked about being competitive earlier. I'm super competitive with sales because I know I'm really good at it. So I would make like 100 to 150 calls like every day. I was going bananas, okay? Mm-hmm. I was making $25 an hour, which by the way is insane.
That's great money.
Yeah, because I forgot the biggest genesis that I had, which was that I want to have one job and make the same amount of money I'm making as opposed to five.
Right.
Burning the candle at all, like every end there is. So I work there. I go back to school that year. I come home again and I say, "Hey, can I work here again?" They say, "Yes." I go back. I'm still an intern, summer intern, making $25 an hour. We're like nearing the end of my internship. And I'm like, I'm so bored. Like, I don't want a cold climber. I'm good at it. Like, can I go shadow this rep in my office today? And she says, "No." However, the other rep in my office, he was the number one agent in Connecticut at the time, overheard me. And he said, "You can come shadow me today. I have this on site at Sikorsky Credit Union. Like, come table for insurance with me." We did it. And I guess it went so well because at the end of the day, the manager's standing there and she says, "Well, we got to talk." And I said, "Oh boy." She said, "Come to my office tomorrow at X time." And basically what happened is they made me this opportunity where I was the first sales associate in the company's history that was still in college.
Wow.
So I was full-time. And I had to get my licenses in like 3 weeks, which I did, which was the craziest thing. Mm-hmm. So now they're like, "All right, like you're a full-time sales associate and you're going back to college. So we need you to work remotely." Guys, for those of you at home, this was before working remote was cool. I was supposed to be president of my fraternity. I stepped down as president. I said, "Fuck it. This is my opportunity to kick the door in." I worked under this guy. I literally set up an office in my dorm room at college. And I was selling insurance when I wasn't at school. Craziest story. Mm. And I learned from a legend in this guy, Ian. Incredible. I owe him everything. And the craziest thing was, is that when I learned everything, I came home from college that year. And I realized that I was pretty good at this, right? And being that I was good at it, I wanted to go take my own shot, be my own agent, you know? And when I became my own agent, before becoming my own agent, I went to my manager. I said, "Listen, I'm ready to do this. I'm selling 10 to 15,000 a week. Let me run." She said, "No." But this time, here's the big difference. This is when I became undeniable. I said, "I'm ready now. You're either going to give me an opportunity to be my own agent, not on someone's team, or I'm going to go do it somewhere else. And you're going to be sorry that you didn't give me this opportunity." She reluctantly agreed. And my first day as an agent was February 1st, 2020. And that was the moment that I realized that I am really undeniable. And there's more to it that I'm sure we'll get to, but that was the moment that I think I became undeniable.
Powerful story, man. Why insurance? Right. So again, I think this is a great, a great lesson for people in general. I can see how you're great at sales.
Yeah.
Your energy is there. You have a great cadence to Thanks. You as well. It keeps people engaged in what you're saying. And I get the feeling, again, you never sold me anything, but I get the feeling that you're very knowledgeable on the things that you choose to be knowledgeable
about. I am.
Right? Yeah, 100%.
Thank you.
And that's evident. But so you were able to basically take a skill and identify a skill and now put that into play. I feel like too often, especially in society, we're not taught to utilize your skills, right? We're taught so much.
Oh, that's an interesting take.
Right? Like we're always taught, you go into an interview, and this is something I do differently when I interview people. Tell me, what's your weakness? Me, I want to know your strengths. Because, yes, we'll get to your weakness, but tell me what you're strong at. So me as a leader, I can put you in a role that you're going to fucking crush at,
yeah.
that you're going to excel at. It seems that you were guided the right way in that aspect, because instead of focusing on all of these turbulent times in your life, you said, yo, you know what? I might have some form of ADHD here.
Totally. I take Adderall every day. Pro Adderall.
But whatever, like, I'm going to utilize this as freaking fuel, man. And that's a beautiful thing. And I think that has to do a lot with, you know, your early success is being able to take that energy, put it into something positive.
Yeah.
Versus focusing on these negative moments.
Totally. Like, I think that, like, really interesting, though, what you just said. Like, I think that when people get jobs, like, they're not using their greatest skill sets, mm-hmm. like when they're at the job, right? Like, it might be like, they might be a coder, but like, they might be an incredible talker and can right. be doing something else. Like, I see that stuff all the time, you know? And I think that, I was very lucky to be guided correctly. And, you know, well, you asked why insurance. I don't know why I chose insurance. I think it's because I had the in. I truly think that, like, a question I ask often is, what'd you want to be when you grew up? I used to say when you grew up, and now we're up. and I wanted to be in ad sales, like Mad Men. Like, I think, because I used to love that stuff. I love creative marketing. Like, but that's so evident in when I brand myself. That was the right. first, I just have never realized this. I am doing ad sales, right? Every time I wear this blue blazer, I don't even know if I said that on this podcast when we were live, but like wearing a blue blazer for my company, a yellow shirt,
this is
my brand. This is ad sales. Every time you see me, you're going to think of blue and yellow. That's brand identity. Right. So I'm channeling things that I'm good at into what I do to make me even better, which I think a lot of people don't do. They do the bare minimum 9 to 5 and go home.
Right.
And that's, I think, a big problem.
Dope. I want to stay right here on sales.
Okay.
When I was doing my research, I saw a clip of you. And honestly, this is something that I've never heard before. Right. So I want you to provide us with two tips that's to make you stand out in sales. The first one that you had mentioned was when you were, well, I'll leave the personal video.
Okay.
That's one. But then the second one was not talking about business when you're out.
Oh, that's a huge one for me.
So talk to us about those two specifically.
So first, like, for those at home, like, I consider myself really good at sales. Not in a cocky, but like, I am really, really good. And it's because I understand sales psychology. The biggest lesson I can give to anyone in sales, and I tell people this all the time, when you're on a sales call, like, you need to be the alpha. Like, it needs to be your call, that client that you're speaking to, they're lucky to be speaking with you when they're speaking to you. A lot of people in sales will pick up the phone when someone calls them. I don't. I send them a follow-up text. Hey, sorry, I can't talk right now on the other line. I'm available tomorrow at X or Y. I never talk to a client the same day unless it's urgent. And that's for new business, like writing a new policy, mm-hmm. because you want them to believe that you're super busy. And, you know, when they do want to talk, it goes on my calendar. Like, that's why what happened today is such a fluke that I was late. I wasn't late. I was actually on time, but I was early.
Even. Yeah, you beat me.
But the reality is like that's one of my tips that I can give someone is you, I can give you so many, but you are the alpha in that conversation. Like, you need to be in control of the conversation, because the reality is they're coming to you for insurance. Nobody, if me and you are on this call, I know that I'm the alpha because I know more about insurance than you.
100%.
Right. You can't out insurance me. Mm-hmm. So the reality is, why would I let someone else be the alpha of my conversation and tell me how the conversation's going to go?
Love that.
That's not who I want to sell to, you know?
That's one. What do you do when you close a deal?
So I do a lot of things, but one of them is I'll take my phone and I'll pick it up and I'll say, hey, Austin, the insurance guy here. And, you know, I just wanted to say thanks for the opportunity and allow you to match my face to my voice. Most of my sales are over the phone. Then I'll ask for the cross sell. So if I haven't sold all lines at once, I'll say in the video, you know, hey, just a reminder, we also do, you know, life insurance if you don't have it. And then by the way, if you send this message, you know, please send this message to 5 friends. And then I'll send them a link to leave a Google review for us and be like, hey, really would appreciate this. And then I have like the 2 arrows going down mm-hmm. and it says, you know, leave a review here.
Okay, so you speak very fast.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I don't want people to miss this because I think
can you slow me down or you want me to say it again?
No, so I think this is golden. But what you're saying is after you close the sale, you send a personal video to people just thanking them for the business.
Hey, just want to say thanks for the opportunity. You know, I am Austin, the insurance guy. This will allow you to match my face to my voice. But most importantly, just so that you know, I'm super thankful for the opportunity to be the insurance agent that you chose to protect what matters most. All the best. I hope to hear from you, your friends, and your family soon. listen. Cheers.
That's fire.
Thanks.
Seriously, that's a good, because I think people, you know, a text is one thing, but
dude,
seeing
but
the actual
so
video,
personal.
That's genius, yeah. Man. It's personal.
And that helps your stick rate.
And then you also threw something else in there too. So this is just a lot of sales tips here. You asked for a cross sale,
mm-hmm.
right? So if you didn't sell all the lines of insurance, you also made a statement
yeah.
of asking for what it is that you fully want.
Because you know the biggest problem, Dave? Now we're talking sales. Now I'm here. How you doing? Listen. The biggest problem in sales is that everybody is afraid to ask. I was just on the phone as you pulled up with a buddy of mine, and I was talking about this girl. I asked this pretty girl out on a date, right? And we're having this conversation, and he
did
goes—
Did she say yes?
Well, we're waiting. She had said yes, but I'm waiting on the follow-up. A lot of people say yes, so you never know, right? But the reality is, Dave, what I learned about talking to women came after what I learned about sales, which is that most people just don't ask, right? You have to ask. They might not know that you sell a product or a good or a service. You have to be in their face. It might seem salesy to you, but there's also a way you can deliver things that you don't sound salesy, but you need to let them know that you do it. The same way I went out of my way and I asked this girl on a date. I went up to her, I said, hey, can I have your number? You know what she said? She said, wow, not a lot of people do that.
Mm-hmm.
And now every guy is afraid to do that because they think either they're not qualified, they don't have the confidence, or two, they're not fit to do it because some other guy is going to go do it. But guess what? Every single person, for the most part, feels that way. They're nervous to do that, mm-hmm. you know? And that was a very big lesson I learned later in business.
I'd put you on the spot. I'd say, let's call her, but we'll save that.
Dude, I wish.
We'll save that. We'll say, I was going to say, we'll see how good your sales skills are.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm still channeling them with women, but we're still channeling
them. That's good. There was a specific, oh, this is the one I haven't heard. When you're out, you have a rule
yeah.
of not, what?
Dude, I can't stand that. I never talk business when I go out. My reality is—
Hold on. You're a salesman, so most people would automatically think the salesman that I know a lot of salesmen, that's all they talk about. That's all they discuss. It's just 24/7. So this is very unique. I encourage people to turn the volume up and listen to Austin right now.
Listen, when you're building, so in my business, it's all about the connections you have, right? Like that's who feed me my deals. I am very big in the business insurance, personal insurance. When I first got started, it was realtors and mortgage brokers. That was like who fed me my deals. It still is a very big majority of who feeds me my deals. When I first got started, I'd wear a suit to every appointment. I had a folder with me and I'd say, and I mean, I'm not much better. I'm in a blazer, but I would say, hey, you know, like, let's talk insurance. Like, here's how insurance works. Like, I can help your clients get to the closing line. Guess how well that worked for me? Zilch. Now, it worked a little bit because I'm still a natural born killer, but the reality is I amplified my conversion when I realized that it's not about business. The people that I was getting the most business from was the people that I actually became friends with, right? I belong to a country club, Braeburn and Purchase, and you know, I take people to play golf all the time. And when we're on the golf course, I have a very strict rule. Do not ask about insurance. I don't really want to hear what's going on in your world. I want to talk about you. But most importantly, when I'm getting to know you, I want to know what you do. That's why we're meeting together. And I want another quick 30-second pitch. But then I want to know, what do you do in your free time? Do you like to golf? Do you have kids? Do you have family? That's how you create lasting relationships. Because guess what? If you're in the relationships business and you are focused on what you do for a living and what that other person does for a living, as soon as someone else does what I'm suggesting, they're going to walk in there and steal your connection, your relationship, and sink your business. So that is like one that I am so now. Listen, as you get in like more
of course,
close with
100%.
Them, they, you know, like I call a buddy. I'm like, hey, where's your deals been? Yeah. I haven't seen a deal from you in 3 months. I go, what's up with this shit? You know, but
yeah.
That's because I have a close enough relationship with him that right. I can do that.
No, I think that's unique, man. I think from the second that people meet, you know, they're already on their pitch about, you know, their
dude,
business.
I hate
and
that.
It really should be value.
Get to know each other. You know what I mean?
And, you know?
But listen, if you do it right, you don't even need to ask.
100%.
Right? If you build your brand and you build your online identity to the point where people can follow you and see what you do, and they see a post and like, hey, dude, I just realized you don't even do my insurance. Can you do that for me?
Mm-hmm.
Then guess what? They're not going to shop you on price.
Yep.
They're just going to go with you because they love you.
That works in any industry because, you know, we even here on this podcast, all we do is free content for 4 years.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a reason why we were able to build ourselves up. So then when Sean Degnan and I want to collaborate and have a summit and we're charging $3,000 a ticket, there's a reason why that summit happened the way that it did.
That's kind of a cool way to, yeah.
It's the truth. And that was never the intention. Like CV and my previous co-host, Mike Pirelli, you know, there were plenty of times that, you know, they had their negative thoughts. And even me, right? You doubt it. The one thing that I can say that I always knew and I remained so truthful to is just keep going, right?
Totally.
Because a lot of people, and again, it sounds cliche, but it's really not. Like, just don't keep showing up is one thing, but also continuing to show up and put an episode out for free every single week.
For
4 years,
it's draining.
You know what I mean? It's hard. But then now when you come, and again, we're still figuring out the whole ask and the way to really monetize this the way that I know that this is going to be monetized.
Yeah.
But now people are here. You know, they're like, what are you doing? I want to be involved.
Well, that's kind of how it happened with me when 100%. I found you. I saw that you interviewed Tony, you interviewed Fran, you interviewed Roman. You know, these are guys I do a lot of business with. They're my close friends. And I was like, wow. And I look at the views and you're like, shit, this is a great opportunity to get in front of an entirely new audience. Mm-hmm. And the same thing for you. You get in front of my entire audience now, right? And I think I think social media is the greatest thing to happen in our entire lives.
If you utilize it properly.
Which is the 100%. Same, but is the same thing about being an alpha in a conversation, right? If you know how to use your tools, you know, you can have 1,000 tools in your workbench, but if you only know how to use one of them, guess what? I'm going to kill you because I know how to use all of them. Mm-hmm. And that's the reality of just being in business.
The tool conversation.
Yeah.
I saw a clip of you and you mentioned in this order, you learned the value of a dollar. Then you learned that money wasn't the root to happiness. And then you learn to believe in yourself.
Dude, you're great. Talk you watched the clip. You like went through the clip. Like that was at the end of the clip.
Well, so for me, I want to genuinely have, again, the knowledge of somebody. And then I want to pick the things that I want to highlight that I feel are important, right?
Yeah. So,
I think there's extreme value here. So, that's
dude, totally. What was the first one again? It was learn the value of a dollar.
So, you
learn
the value of a dollar.
Okay, let me take you through and break it down. That was me going through everything with my parents. Them not saving money, having no financial intelligence, and having to figure out how to make my own dollars.
Okay.
What was the second?
You learned that money wasn't the root to happiness.
Okay. That was working for a bigger company where I became number 9 in the country. And I didn't even touch on this or how I launched SafeShield yet. But why not now? So what happened was I was working for this company and the reality was I was a monster. Okay. Like I had become number 9 in the country. I had a huge property and casualty book. And like, it was cool. Like my brother and I worked for the same company. Like we'd win everything. Like we'd go on trips. Like we were the Glazer brothers, which is ironic because my dad's appliance store was that was what it was called. It's called Glazer Brothers. And Adam and I, my brother, we really were the shit. Like we really like did some really cool things together, that company. And I'm super grateful and thankful for that time. But the reality is my brain was bigger than just working for a company and being like winning contests. And like, you know, the model of that company was really tied to just new business, not so much renewals, right? And in insurance, like first, like you get in the business for renewals. Like that is why, like that is the money.
Well, because there's a
passive income.
Passive income, sort but of, so yeah. Just, and to give a basic understanding, when you write insurance, that renewal might give you X percentage the following year automatically. Right?
Well, here, I'll just give it to you like this. Say I write a $1,000 policy for you and I make 10% of that and that's $100. Let's just keep it simple. I make $100 every year you renew with me.
Right. Okay.
That's a high level.
Yeah.
So I was there and because they were paying so little on renewals, like it was really like, it felt like a rat race, right? Like you had to work so hard for every deal and like those relationships and those clients, like I have a mentality when I work with a client, like I front load it with knowledge. So like I'll take an hour to 2 hours and onboard a client even for a $300 deal because they'll be with me forever because of that time that I took.
Correct.
But like I got really unhappy because I was killing myself for new business because I wanted to be the greatest. I was so competitive, but I wanted to be the best. And the reality was the rates weren't great there and I didn't really believe in the vision. But most importantly, they weren't allowing me to continue build my brand as Austin the Insurance Guy. And that was when I gave up making high six figures and I said, fuck this, I'd rather die. Right. Because the reality is I thought about getting, to be honest with you, I thought about getting out of the business.
Really?
Yeah. Like I interviewed at like 37 different companies. I had like 32 offers. And I said, no way am I going to go work for the man again. No fucking way. Like what I became was so mentally unhealthy. I probably ruined a relationship I had with another girlfriend. I've had a few girlfriends throughout the story, but that's terrible.
I've had
a few girlfriends, but they've all allowed me to grow exponentially, right? And I probably ruined a relationship combined with a bunch of other shit. But that time period in my life, I was so stressed. I was working like 12-hour days, dude. Like, you don't have to do that, right? And that's when I realized that I said, fuck it. If I'm going to do this, I'm going to go create something using my brand, my vision, and my originality to do whatever comes of this. At least I'm doing it with my name tied to it. And I said, fuck it, let's do it.
Beautiful.
And then what was the third one?
Learning to believe in yourself.
That's it. I said, fuck it, I can do this.
And it was because of,
well,
I think you started to gain some fulfillment when your passion and your purpose start to align. I think that starts to create a sense of fulfillment in your life.
Dude, totally. Like what happened was, so I had all these offers from these companies. And the thing was with all these offers, right, Dave, is they were like, you can either, so I wanted to do everything. I want to do commercial insurance, personal insurance. I want to be Austin the insurance guy. You know, one place would be like, you could be Austin the insurance guy, but you can't be this or that. You can't do that or this. And I was sitting at dinner one night. I was talking to a buddy and I told him this. And he said, what are you fucking nuts? Let's go do it yourself. As simple as that. I go, but it's not that. He goes, shut the fuck up. There's no excuses. Just go do it. Go do it. And I did it. And a year later, it was the best decision I ever made. And, you know, who knows what the future holds? It might look like a merger of SafeShield to another insurance company, and I get consolidated, and I become an owner of another company, and, yep. And you parlay a $1 million book into a $15 million book, and maybe the SafeShield name dies. I don't know. Mm-hmm. The reality is that I'll have built it, though, and my name will be tied to it. I'll have achieved my mission.
Right.
And then I can still be an owner somewhere else, and I can continue building my brand the way I want to build it, which is what I love to do. I've realized that insurance is just a product that I'm really good at selling. What I love doing is making an impact. And that's what I've been so fortunate to do for the last 7 years that I've been in this business. Mm-hmm. And it took me so long to realize that. So when I learned to believe in myself, that's another time in my life that I said, fuck it, I'm undeniable. Why not me? Mm. Why not me?
I want to stay in the insurance piece just off of some general knowledge for sure. People, right? So my dad's in the insurance business as well. Farmers.
Yes.
Farmers.
That's
right?
What we think, right?
From yeah. Not state farmers, farmers.
Okay.
There's so many names. Yep. You were mentioning Liberty Bibberty from the commercial, and then you got SafeShield. Is SafeShield your name?
I own it.
No, but that's your name?
Yeah,
what other shield am I thinking?
Safe Light, maybe.
Oh, I'm thinking Safe Light.
They're glass repair.
Yes.
I own the trademark SafeShield, actually.
That's awesome. So one thing that my dad has done for me is, and again, this is just generally speaking. So you were speaking about jewelry before, right? And, you know, I'm into the watch game. I own a home. My dad writes all my insurance, obviously.
Sure, I assumed. I didn't think I was walking out of here with your insurance.
So I think this is just for people in general who have homeowners insurance, right? You need to really look at that policy because...
Dude, I've met your dad before. At Tony's cigar dinners.
100%.
Yes, I have. And Tony, this is so crazy. I've met your dad before. We've had several conversations. Okay, I'm sorry. I just put it, by the way, it is Farmers, 100%.
100%. Okay. I saw you just had a look.
Yeah, because I put it together and I realized that Tony introduced me and he's like, yo, you know the No Snooze podcast? This is his dad. Did not know you at that time.
Yeah.
But I think I was right around the time Tony's episode was released. Sorry to cut you off.
No, okay. All good.
Sorry. That was a euphoric thing. Go ahead.
So I happened to learn this lesson the freaking hard way, man. So my dad was always telling me, you know, on the homeowners, there's ways to cut corners to keep your costs down, right?
Sure.
But there's something called scheduled personal property.
Yeah.
On insurance that most people don't do. So I had a jewelry policy.
That's what you should do.
Yeah, but my policy was only like $10,000.
Well, you should go off appraised value.
So what I did was I ended up screwing that up completely. I had a watch get stolen from me. Ended up like taking a big loss on it.
Okay.
But really what it did, because I'm very like forceful when it comes to, especially my dad.
Right.
My dad, keep me at this cost. Don't raise my shit. Don't do nothing. But he was able to identify both the jewelry policy and also the
scheduled personal property.
Not the scheduled personal property. That was a separate thing. But my liability, like if somebody falls at my house.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Yeah. So like I had originally on my policy before my dad took it over, I think I had like 50,000 or 200,000, which is not a lot of money. If somebody comes to your house and it could be your best friend in the world, right? And if they don't have insurance and there's $1 million worth of damage, they're going to sue you regardless.
Yeah.
Right. And it's not a problem until it's an actual problem. So what would your advice be to people who have homeowners insurance, the specifics for them to look at?
So here's a concept I actually came up with. I think it's the best work I've ever done. So I want you to picture a triangle, okay? This is a concept I call the triangle of protection. And your triangle looks like this, right? So there's three points to a triangle. We're going to call them pillars, okay? And then the lines that connect the pillars are your fence, okay? So at the center of your triangle is going to be all your assets, so your net worth. So let's say you have a $1 million house, okay? even though you have debt, you still have $1 million of debt, which therefore makes it something I can categorize as an asset here, okay? So I know you have a minimum of $1 million. So let's keep it simple. Let's call it $1 million, okay? Now, the first pillar of your triangle, and before we dive into it, I want to help people understand that there's a huge misconception that insurance only covers if my property burns down, rebuild, right? Putting my house back together. What people don't also realize is your insurance also does cover things like liability, like putting you in a hotel if your house burns down. All these things that you're not aware of, right? But in this particular example, let's talk about the triangle of protection, the first pillar, which is going to be rehouse, replace, rebuild. And what that's going to contain is going to be, if your house burns down, how do you put it back together, right? How do I also live somewhere while it's being built? So now, let's say your house is worth $1 million. You should have over $1 million on that first pillar so that it stands at a height taller. So maybe you have $1.1 million, including rebuild, right? So $1.1 million should be higher than what's at the center, which is $1 million, because you want to protect it, okay? Now, the second pillar is going to be your liability. So what happens if I get sued, right? The reality is that more often than not, most home insurance, car insurance, boat insurance, they max out around $500,000 of liability, which is fine. You should always be okay with that, right? But the problem is, if in the center of my triangle is my assets and I have $1 million of assets, but the second pillar of the triangle is only 500,000, here's the height comparison of my triangles right now. This being the pillar, this being your assets. So what do we do to sort of fix that? We add an umbrella policy that now brings us to here. So umbrella policies will add like $1 million of coverage. So now you have $1.5 million and now your assets are safeguarded. But the important thing to think about with liability that a lot of people don't realize is that, like you said, somebody could come over, trip, fall, they could be on a boat and you could be pulling them on a sled and they fall. Or even if you're playing in a rec soccer game and you trip someone and they break their ankle. It's called personal liability. It's not homeowner's liability, it's personal liability. The insurance company is protecting their asset. And guess what? You're their asset. You're the one that they're trusting to live in the home. So it's important that you're basically protecting your net worth. So now we have the two triangles, so the two pillars of our triangle, right? We're missing just one more. We had rebuild, replace, and rehome. The second pillar was liability. What if I get sued? Both are sitting like here while our assets are here at the center of our triangle. Now, the third pillar is the most important, right? Because we talk about rebuild, house burns down, liability. What if I get sued? Basically, all your avenues of exposure. But you know the one we didn't cover? What happens if you die? What happens to your family? Like, do you expect them to continue to be able to afford the mortgage payments without you? So typically what I'll do is I'll propose like a 30-year term policy as well, so that now you're all three of your pillars are sitting up here while your assets are down here. So you built this fence.
You're talking life insurance right now.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So you built this fence that stands, you know, $1.1 million instead of $1 million. So you're safeguarded in the event of a loss from all three pillars. You're building a wall of protection. That's why I call it the triangle of protection.
That's a beautiful way to look at it. And thanks. Honestly, I happen to be a little bit more knowledgeable because of my father,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But even still, sometimes it's right
yeah.
there. I will guarantee you the majority of listeners don't have enough term insurance, whole yeah. life. Forget whole life. You're talking about just term.
People
right?
don't even realize.
That's one thing. And then the second thing is, why do most homeowners have a policy that if they're, I'll take CV for example, and I'm curious actually to know. Say his house is $500,000, right? I will guarantee you the policy that he has on a rebuild, maybe $250,000. Why is that?
You get me started here. There's a lot of brokerages out there that unfortunately cut corners and they're going off rebuild costs and they're giving you like actual cash value.
What would be the advice to people though who don't really look at their policy? Is it just look at the policy or is it like go look at two specific things?
Call Safe Shield Insurance. No, I'm only kidding. But I'm not kidding.
Your number is going to go up though. That's the yeah. thing. Your number will go up, but we want to keep that number down.
Well, okay. Well, see, that's like a big conversation that I'm having right now because insurance has been skyrocketing for the last 5 years, but now we're like really hitting a pinnacle where lots of companies are pulling out and there's less and less companies. Like here at Stanford, like long-term, we're pretty screwed with insurance. There's not going to be a lot of carriers left here in 10 years. And when that happens, it becomes a supply and demand situation. So now you're in this position where there's only a few carriers, but what I'd advise you is like, listen, a few things. Don't file claims unless you absolutely have to file them. Like I've seen people file claims for like $200-$300. And it's like, sure, you want your money. I get it. You pay for insurance. The reality is I don't work for any insurance company. I just represent my clients and I'm telling you how to keep your rate low. That's what I tell clients all the time. If you're going to file a meaningless claim, your exposure or your risk exposure now increases, which gives them the ability to charge you more. right? But so that's one thing I would coach them on. But in terms of how do I know if my policy limits are enough? Roughly.
They're not.
Roughly, here's what you can do, right? So one thing I'll tell you on insurance is it's not about what you paid for the house. We don't care about where it is. Like, to a degree, we do. Mm-hmm. What we care about is black and white. What does it cost to rebuild this house? So, you know, for in Stanford, for example, I would use a roughly like a take your square footage and do like times 350. You should be somewhere in that range. But that varies by like Greenwich is like 550.
Yep. That's so, per square foot, you're
saying? Yeah. So that's a rough number of where your dwelling should sit.
Wow. Yeah, because I the more that I talk to people about it, they'll go look at their policy and they'll be like, oh my God, my house right now, I can sell it for 700. But if it burns down tomorrow, I'll get a cash value of 300,000.
By the way, that works on the inverse sometimes too.
It's terrible.
Take a house like in Bridgeport, for example, like a multifamily in Bridgeport. That's a four family house, but because it's in Bridgeport, it's selling for 300, but it's worth like a million to knock down. Mm-hmm. That's why you see so much arson.
Wow.
Because arson exists because people are intelligent when it comes to their insurance. Yep. And they know how to like do it, you know?
Yeah, this is a valuable conversation if people actually choose to.
I have never like talked about insurance on a podcast because it's kind of like the mindset that I have, which is like no business. But like there are so many things that I can talk about when it comes to insurance because like this is my life. And like you said, I'm super educated on this. I am. And I think that I am one of the more knowledgeable people. But like people don't know this. And my ultimate goal is just to be educational. Like I tell this to clients all the time. Whether you're going to go with me or not, like my reality is like, I want you to leave here smarter than when you picked up the phone or when you called me, like, because I don't pick a phone, but like if you call me, like I'm not outbound calling anymore. Like if you call me, like I want you to be smarter by the time we end this conversation. That's my ultimate goal. Like I do want to help people because I believe that in tenfold, it'll come back and they'll come to me at some point.
Wow. Are you looking to elevate your brand with captivating visuals and immersive sound? Look no further than the home of the No Snooze podcast, Kai Visions Productions, your go-to destination for cutting-edge audio and video production. At Kai Visions, we don't just create content. We create experiences that leave a lasting impact. From podcasts, YouTube variety shows, sleek corporate videos, to attention-grabbing promotional campaigns, our team of experts is dedicated to turning your vision into reality. Choose Kai Visions for a production experience like no other. It's time to make your brand known. Contact us today at kaivisions@gmail.com or find us on Instagram at Kai Visions. Kai Visions Productions, where audiovisual excellence meets innovation. Now, back to the epi.
All right, I want to gear you, I guess, to life. So
sure.
Recently I've been trying to, just like everybody in the world, you're trying to like step into your purpose a little bit more, right? And I've noticed that there's three main pillars, which we've actually incorporated now into this ACE movement that we're utilizing. But I'm at my very best when every single day I do three things. I challenge myself, and that could be a physical challenge. So like me actually getting into the gym and doing some hard things and working out. Me learning. So that could be me consuming content like we were talking about. Instead of me driving in my car listening to, you know, the Today Show or Elvis Duran or whatever it is, I think there's time and a place for that. I'm listening to something educational. So I'm challenging myself and I'm learning. Mm-hmm. And then the third thing that I believe I'm at my best every single day is when I'm serving. So like for you, it's that educational piece. Mm-hmm. But for me, it's me encouraging somebody, me inspiring somebody, somebody coming into my office with a frown and me being able to, turn that into something positive.
Absolutely.
For them, right? So challenge, learn, serve. For you, when are you at your best? What do you look to do in your world every single day?
Well, like I'm also in the gym every day. Like that is so important. Like that's my start to my day. I think that it's like a mental thing. Like it's not even always about just being the strongest person in the room. It's about like, to me, like just running a little bit, lifting a little bit. And I see great gains there now because I've changed my mindset. But like that's really important to me is like just getting in there and like doing something to start my day. Like I can't just wake up at 8:45 and go sit at my desk by 9. And by the way, there are people that do that.
100%.
Blows my mind.
That's the majority of society.
Dude, can't believe that. But I would say that's like what I have to do every day. Mm-hmm. I also have to listen to music every day. Mm. Music's my whole life. Like, I'm a huge music guy. Like,
really?
Yeah. Oh, man. I love music.
What kind of music?
The Grateful Dead. Like, I love jam bands.
Oh, music.
Yeah, like the 70s, the 80s, man. Like, I'm not into rap, really. I know you were saying you were earlier, but like.
I like hip hop in general. You
okay.
know? But I also like, I love country.
Yeah, country's great. I'm not even kidding. When I in my office at my house, I had a sound bar. I put a sound bar up that works with, like, do you know Sonos systems?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a really big Sonos guy. But I got a sound bar in there so that I could basically watch Grateful Dead concerts. It goes through the sound bar, but then I could play it throughout the entire house.
Wow, CD's like, getting excited back then.
Yeah, I'm like, man, music's my whole entire, it's changed my life too. Like, that's the thing. Like, that taught me how to relax. And like, I tell my friends this all the time. They think I'm kidding. I always say that, I can't even go on the record and say this, but like, if I died young, like, I wouldn't be super, like, I wouldn't be, like, mad about it. Because the reality is I live every day like it could be my last.
Would you have an opportunity to really be mad
no,
about it?
No, you wouldn't. But what I always tell them, though, is I say, listen, if I die, like, just, and I'm not even saying I get cremated, I'm like, take my ashes to a live show. Like, this is, like, I want my final moments on this earth to be at a live concert. Because, man, I'm getting excited talking about it, you know? Like, it's like, that's who I am. I just love music. I love watching and listening and just... some of the things they can do is so incredible. And it's so like, people don't realize how hard it is to play an instrument, right? Like I talk on the phone for a living, right? These guys do things with guitars and drums and harmonicas and all this crazy shit that would blow your mind. It's fascinating to me.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
So working out, music, anything else?
No.
Talk to me a little bit about that Whoop.
So, yeah.
And this is why I'm asking, right? I feel like something like that is meant to be so positive, and I'm a big data guy. Love it. But I've been struggling, and it's ironic because I was on a really good sleep pattern, man. Really, really good. Like, I got on this podcast back in December. I was taking magnesium, which I'm still taking. But, like, I was in really deep sleeps. I stopped drinking for the new year.
Forever?
No. I'm just going. I know you gave me a bottle.
So no, that's what I wasn't even thinking about.
No.
Someone will drink it, but
no.
Forever.
Oh no, absolutely. But no. So I'm not putting any timeline on it. I wanted to do the 30 days. Then I did an episode with my buddy Chris James, and he's like, "Yo, at 30 days, he's been a year sober, and he's like, you know, I might drink at some point, but he's like, at 30 days, I remember just starting to feel the benefits. I was never really a drinker, like during the week, but on the weekends, I'm hanging with the boys.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, I'm anywhere 5 to 20 on a weekend.
Totally.
You know what I'm saying? Like, very, very casual, too. Like, and I'm drinking, you know, Macallan.
I'm drinking some good stuff. I'm a big drinker. Yeah.
I'm drinking good stuff.
I love
stuff,
to drink.
You know? So then when I stopped drinking, for whatever reason, man, my sleep went to shit. And it's very ironic to me. So me, like, looking at the data of that and understanding, you know, and he's showing the Whoop band, but I don't really want to look at that data right now, you know,
really
tell me about the Whoop and what it does for you, actually.
So it's really funny that you're saying this, okay? Because about a year ago, I got like really, like, I've always been into fitness, but like not like to the point of like, I look good, feel good. Like, I'm more of like a feel good guy. And like, I work out very hard. Like, I've got my bench up almost to 300 pounds. Like, I'm doing it, right? And, you know, I had the Apple Watch for a while. And the Apple Watch, right, it tells you that you're burning like 1,000 calories.
It's very foo-foo.
Dude, so like that really fucked with me though, right? So I was talking to somebody and they're like, you should get a Whoop. So I got the Whoop, and I am becoming to the point, like literally in the last 5 days, that like, for example, like yesterday, I felt like I had a really hard workout, but it didn't track. Okay, so I got really upset.
On the Whoop, it didn't?
Yeah, it didn't track.
Why?
I have no idea. I just was like, all right, like I'm not gonna like spend too much time on it not working, but you know, they have this thing on the calendar. Someone showed me that if you get over 10 strain, you get like a dot next to it.
Yeah.
So like, I try to get 10 strain every day. But like, I also think that when you lift really heavy, like you might not get 10 strain because you're like, there's a way to cheat it, right? It's just, I mean, cheating is not the right word because you're running. You're still burning the calories.
Yeah.
But like running, you're almost guaranteed to get a 10. Well,
is it based off your heart rate?
Yeah.
Is that what? Okay. Yeah. So running, your heart rate is going through the roof.
Right. But when you're lifting, at least for me, I'm not getting a crazy heart rate. You know, like I'm probably 120, 130. When I'm running, I'm like 170 because I'm taking Adderall. You know what I mean? But that really bothers me, right? So I might lift and then I get to 10 and dude, it drives me fucking bananas. Like to the point of like, I would sacrifice like my recovery to go to the gym again, 2 or 3 times in a day to get to 10 because it bothers me so much. The recovery stuff, I don't really mind, but the sleeping I've really got into recently, and I don't like the way that it makes me feel if I don't get enough sleep because it gets in your head. You're like, I didn't sleep enough today. I'm fucked. That's not cool. You know, like I did. One thing I have learned is I'm a very good sleeper. I sleep like 8 hours a night every night. I did not know that. And I find that very impressive.
And it tracks everything, right?
Yeah, which is very cool. That's it took some getting used to wearing it to sleep. But like there'll be days that I only get like to 9 strand and I'm like, I'm pissed about this. I'm pissed. And I don't like that because I know I'm working out hard. I know I'm getting stronger. I know I'm being better. But if anything, it just brings me down a little bit. You
right,
know?
Right. Have you heard of the Aura?
I have, but that's like $600 though, right?
Well, so I think it's 300, I think, off the top, and then maybe 30 a month, something like that.
Dude, crazy. Expensive. They're so smart to make these
assholes. So this does even better. Does that give you sleep debt?
Yes.
It does.
It does.
Okay, so maybe it's...
Yeah, but like, I'm not going to sleep more because it tells me to sleep more.
But I would. I would be like, I'm not going to work today. I'm taking the extra 2 hours.
Really?
Yeah, but then I can't fall asleep anyway. Like, it's gotten...
in trouble falling asleep.
It's gotten hard, man. But so now I'm finally knocking on some wood. I'm getting back to a really good sleep routine. But now this is almost day 60 of no alcohol.
Dude, that's crazy. So I'm going to... I mean, I'm sure I could do it. But that's so impressive that you've done that.
Well, honestly, so... I've also listened to, you know, Andrew Huberman?
Sounds super familiar.
Okay, so he's like one of the top doctors for all the top guys, but he's he's huge right now. I'll send you stuff.
Yeah.
But he did a podcast on actually what alcohol does to the body. And mind you, it runs, like, I have a couple addicts in my family, all in recovery. But mom specifically has been sober now 5+ years, one of my best friends.
Congrats.
I literally shout her out every episode. And what she's done for her life is absolutely incredible. So I already know it's in my genes. But he breaks down in a 2-hour episode what alcohol does to the body. Just 2 drinks, 3 drinks, 1 drink a night. And from what I was drinking, I would be considered a moderate to heavy drinker.
Me too.
100%, right? So the long story on that is, like, you know, for thousands and thousands of years, you had warriors and gladiators going to war, right? And they didn't have, like, first aid kits and all this shit. So if you get your... leg blown off or you got a cut, you're pouring alcohol on it. And what is it doing to that cut? It's killing everything. It's killing all the bacteria. When you consume alcohol, it literally kills every single good piece of bacteria that you have in your body.
Probably the bad ones too, though.
Not so much. But also the brain and the cognitive approach that he takes in this episode, it was mind-blowing to me. So now that I know this information, I'm like, I don't know how I can ever go back to the relationship that I had with alcohol.
You see, that's...
It will forever be different for me.
Well, that's... Like, I don't know that I want to quit alcohol.
No,
I know, but, like, I know what you're saying. Like, so recently I quit vaping, like, the nicotine. I was vaping for 10 years.
And then running on the treadmill?
Yeah. Oh, dude. For some reason, it did not outwardly affect me.
Really? Well, that's funny you say that. There's this brolic guy in the gym, and literally before he puts his bag in his locker, I see him
vaping. Lots of people. That's not super uncommon.
Really?
Yeah, it's super common, actually.
This is kind of stupid, though, no?
It's probably people like around my age are doing that. Yeah.
Stupid, dude.
So, like, I quit. That wasn't easy.
Yeah, no.
Like, I can't believe I quit. Like, I quit by accident, actually. So I was doing the vape for literally 10 years. Like, I've gone through all the modifications. I had the big puffer at one point. Then I went to the Juul. Then I did, like, all of the variations, the Elf bars. And one day, I can't remember why I did it. I just said, fuck it, I'm done. And I said, I'm going to switch to Zyns, okay? Because I think, like, a lot of friends, Zyns are, like, the pouches that are filled with nicotine. Okay. Have you heard of these?
I've heard of, like, what's it called, dipping?
No, it's different. This is straight nicotine.
Oh.
So they're actually much better for you, they say, than seriously, because there's no tobacco in it.
Okay.
It's just straight up nicotine. It's still very addictive. So I, like, tried it, and I'm like, all right, this is, like, isn't great. I was never, like, a dipper, so, like, I was like, I'm just going to do it. I was, like, doing it for a few days, and, like, when I was vaping, I liked, like, the fruity flavors.
Mm.
So I got, like, this great, like, blueberry-flavored, like, Zyn knockoff. It's called Rogue. I loved it.
Blue,
like,
because of Safe Shield, obviously.
Yeah, come on. I'm branding all the time.
Branding,
man,
everything.
All the time. So I get this flavor and I'm like having the best time, right? And like, I'm like, oh, I love these. Like, I found my new thing. Like, I'm addicted. Yeah, you know, no more vaping. So then I couldn't find them in the stores anymore. So I ordered a case of literally 30 of them, 30 packs of these containers. And they were like, all right, they'll be here in a week. So I'm like, all right. So I went to the vape store and I got this shitty knockoff brand that, like, was not good. Like, really, like, didn't make me feel well or anything. So I'm like, they said that they'll be here in a week. So I'm like, on day 2, and I'm like, I fucking hate this. So I just, like, forgot to do it, wasn't doing it. And before I knew it, I was like, oh, I can do this. Like, I'm just going to quit. And I returned to sender the package, and I have done, I mean, I'll do, like, a little bit, like, I'll hit a vape if I'm out and about, like, drunk.
Yeah.
That's, like, my one thing I allow. It's not great. Don't tell anybody.
No one's listening.
No one's listening. But yeah, so I'll do it only when I drink, really.
Yeah, yeah.
If a friend has it, I won't buy it. Yep. But, I mean, man, what a thing that was for me to quit. Mm. And, like, it was, dude, my generation is completely fucked with the vaping. Like, so many people vape. They do the Zins. Like, it's a really scary thing.
Have you gone to the doctor? So it's weird, man. I used to, I'm embarrassed to say, but, you know, I'm big into cigars. I'm not embarrassed about cigars that at nice. All. Like, I love cigars. And I'm a huge, like, I'm actually a connoisseur when it comes to cigars, right? But when I would drink, if there was a cigarette around, I'm smoking.
Yeah, me
like,
too.
You know what I mean?
I'll still do that.
But I would feel, like, actually feel something. So have you felt any negative benefits to the vape or no? Because I feel like some people are just like, dude, no, I never.
I understand. I was doing it for 10 years. I started out when I was like, I started literally like at 17 years old. And I was doing it, man. Like, doing it. Like,
have you gotten tests or no?
For what? What are they texting me for?
I don't know.
I'm fine. You know, I feel good. I run. I could do 3-4-5 miles a morning.
You sound like my grandmother. Live. She smoked 2 packs for her whole life. Yeah. And every time I would ask, Grandma, how's your lung? She's like, I'm fine.
Well, so I do all those tests every year, like when you do your physical and shit. Nothing comes back, you know. Listen, if it, I'll be a little upset if it takes me and I had to quit vaping.
Right.
I die because I vaped, but I didn't get to do vaping at the end. Yeah. I'd be a little upset that I quit at that point. And then, like I said, I wouldn't be sad if I died, but I would be sad if I died if it was because of that after quitting and not getting to drink the whole time.
No, I love this, man. Good conversation. Where do you want to get better in your life, man? Like as a man, what do you want to what do you want to improve on?
It's a great question. I'm going to give you like a sort of like a general answer. I think what person wouldn't say everywhere, right?
What does that mean though?
Everything. Like, I think that I can do better at work. I think I can do better personally. I think that anybody who thinks they're at the pinnacle is in the wrong room, man. Mm-hmm. You're never the smartest person in any room you walk into. And by the way, I never want to be. I never want to be the smartest person in any room because that means I've reached a meaningless life.
Yeah. So I agree with you 100%. I think it's a very humble approach. And I don't ask that question because I ever believe anybody to be at a pinnacle.
Yeah.
But I do think there needs to be a level of specificity on what it is that you're trying to
achieve. So you want some specifics. So I have to work more on being like as a business. So I'll give you as a business owner, as a person, and as a friend, as a family member. Okay. Yeah. So I think as a business owner, I need to do a better job of working on the business instead of in the business. That's the biggest challenge I've ever dealt with in my life. And I've gone through some shit, as you heard. This has been the biggest challenge I've ever faced. As a person, just maybe being like open to like dating someone, I guess. I think that's like, I'm getting old. You know what I mean? Like I'm getting older.
What are you, 27?
I'm 27, but like, I'm getting old. Like I have to like settle down soon. You know, like I'm getting to the age where I'm like, all right, like enough building the company, enough getting drunk. Like I gotta go fucking like do life now. You know, I have some kids. It's like, and like, there's like a 6-year plan here. You know, like by the time I'm 30, I should probably be with the person I'll marry. I don't know if I'm gonna get married by 30.
Don't rush, man. Don't rush.
No, I have to. You know,
younger. Don't rush.
Yeah. Well, no, I don't have to rush. But like the person I have to marry, you know what I mean? Like it's got to be like I want to have kids. You know, so like I have like a 6-year plan, a 6-year window of having kids. So
okay,
I got to figure it out.
Yeah.
As a friend, nothing. I'm the fucking man. No, I'm just kidding. As a friend, honestly, I think I'm a really good friend. But maybe doing a better job listening, if I had to give you one. As a family member, same thing. Is there anyone else?
Is there anyone else
I left out?
How are you? I'm thinking about my weaknesses, right? And I want to.
I have several weaknesses.
Like what?
My weaknesses is control. I have a really hard time, like with work, giving up control.
Giving up control,
because I find that I think I'm really good at it.
That's a good one.
And I think that. You know, I've been working with sales coaches and one of the things they're telling me is that like, take your foot off the gas. Like it's okay if you don't convert on a couple of deals, but you build your business out, right? And you work on infrastructure that maybe it takes 10 years to make 10 times the income. But if you don't build this infrastructure, you only make 5 times the income in 10 years. So that's a really big one for me.
How's your patience?
Super low.
Mine's terrible.
Mine's super low.
I'm awful.
Yeah, I'm really bad.
That's where everything always comes back to that.
Yeah.
And it's something that I'll like keep saying because I want to keep making it better, you know.
I don't think I'm gonna get
but that. Like, I mean, from my daughter who's 3.5, like at times my patience is extremely low. One thing I've also noticed in relationships, and these could be intimate relationships or even friendships, I get frustrated over dumb stuff.
Me too. And I had a fight with my friend when I was at the gym today.
It doesn't matter. Like, why do I get like that,
dude? It's so funny you bring this up. I didn't know how to like. I didn't know what to tie this to. So I get really frustrated at my friends sometimes. Like if they don't think of me.
If they don't think of me.
So like one of my best friends. My two best friends, Kevin and Duke. They're like my brothers basically. There's no chance they listen. They're so tired of hearing and seeing what I do, but they're stuck with me because they're like my brothers. So they went to a Knick game last night and they had 2 extra tickets. So they took like 2 other people. people.
Oh, you're pissed.
And I texted Duke, and Duke's like a big muscle motherfucker.
I would hope his name is Duke.
Yeah, dude, he's a scary, scary dude, but he's like one of my best friends. I'm not afraid of him. You know, what are you going to hit me? You can't hit me. We're best friends, you know? You have to deal with this. So I texted him, I'm like, yo, what the fuck, dude? Thanks for the invite. He goes, are you fucking, dude, just erupted on me over text. And I'm like, so I'm just like playing into it. Like, I'm really mad. Like, I'm in the gym. Like, I'm running and texting. Like, dude, oh my God.
And you're late for a podcast.
I get so mad at friends, though. Like, only my friends, really, I get really mad at.
Well, you know why that is, right? And this is something that I've, like, and again, you're saying this is a therapy session a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But this is because I'm in therapy, too. So this happens to me a lot.
Yeah.
But you always do that only with the people that you love the most.
Because you can't go anywhere. You're stuck with me. this is what I tell them all the time. Like, you are fucking stuck with me. Like, I can say whatever the fuck I want to you. You could say whatever the fuck you want to me. But guess what? At the end of the day, I'm still going to call you if I'm stranded in the highway. Yep. You know? Like, this is your job. You're my best friend. You're stuck. With me.
You're
like,
stuck.
It's a two-sided relationship, I promise. Yep, you know what I mean?
As we wrap up, I guess talk to me a little bit about your, it's funny, we go from all these F-bombs to motivational speaking journey.
Yeah.
To the motivational speaking journey. You clearly have a very high level of intelligence when it comes to being able to articulate your own story.
Thanks.
Which is a serious skill, man. It's impressive. And I said it earlier in the episode, but it's definitely the cadence and the rhythm and the momentum that you bring to each conversation. It's very unique about you.
Thank you.
You should continue to dive into that space. How did you, and why? Why did you say, like, you know what? Okay, I'm going to do the insurance stuff, but I'm also going to get into motivational speaking.
Few things there to unpack. So when it comes to public speaking, there was a few angles that I went at it with. And first, thank you for the kind words. It's my proudest quality I have. Is my ability to tell my story. Because there are so many people that go through hard times and don't have anyone to look up to and say, hey, he did it. And I didn't have that. And I say this with so much sincerity. I really hope that when I tell my story on a podcast or speak it on a stage in front of 1,000 people or tell a friend, that it makes an impact in their life and I can help them. Because that shit changed my life. And look what I've become. Undeniable, right? Why'd I get into it? For a few different angles. The first being, I can either go one-on-one in business and it could be me and you, and then I'm only speaking to you one-on-one, or I could go 1 to 1,000 and I can do a really good job telling my story and you're going to follow me on Instagram. And now guess what? You're in my ecosystem and you don't realize it, but one day you'll buy insurance for me. And that's why I got into public speaking. But most importantly, the reason I got into public speaking was to tell my story. No joke. I walked into Brandon Gadoris. He's someone that, of all the people I've mentioned, I think he's the best one that might listen, honestly. I don't think anyone else will listen, but
he was on this podcast.
Was he?
Very early on.
He's a good dude.
Very early on. Brandon reached out to us. This was at the beginning, right? Year two, probably. And he was one of our like first
he's
guests.
He's such a good person.
Yeah, he's a very good dude.
With a very driven purpose on what he wants to accomplish. Mm-hmm. We did a stand-up comedy show together, him and I. He's really like just so incredible. I mean, I walked into... So I was like, yo, let me speak at ADBCon. And in his mind, he's like, who the fuck is, like, no, you know? And we made a side deal. I can't go into specifics, he'll yell at me, but we made a side deal back in the day. And he said, I'm not letting you do speaker school unless you come, and I'm not letting you do A to B unless you come to speaker school. I said, I don't fucking need speaker school. But I did it. And dude, it changed my mind, it changed my life. You know what's so funny though? You asked me about three things I said earlier that were in my keynote presentation, which was the concept of the dollar, forget the middle one, and how to believe in yourself, right? And
that money wasn't the root to happiness.
Right.
That was the second
one. Do you know that's a keynote that I came up with him? Like that line was the tie together of my keynote because those were the three paragraphs or the sub points that I talked about throughout that episode, that speech. Mm-hmm. But Dave, the real reason I got in, like I said, is truly to make an impact. I believe my story is so incredible. And that sounds so cocky or weird to hear someone say about their own story. But I look at all these people that I grew up with in Long Island and Westchester, and a lot of them haven't experienced hardship. Or maybe they have, but they've kept it so bottled up and haven't told anyone, which is more than likely,
mm-hmm.
right? And I'm also, one thing we haven't dove into, and I know now's not the time because we're beginning to wrap up, but like, I am really pro mental health. I've been in therapy for a very long time. Like, I have medical issues. I take medication. But mental health is the number one thing that you need to understand. And when I finally understood it, that's when I launched Safe Shield. because it was about doing things my way, right? I wear this chain every day for those at home that can see it. It says my way, right? And the really cool thing about this chain is My Way was the song that my grandfather passed away to, okay? And literally in the background, if you knew my grandfather, he was one of the pioneers that basically put together the hot dog company, Hebrew National.
Wow.
Yeah. So he was like, so he didn't really start it, but he sort of started it. It's complicated, but he was like, he was the vice president of my great uncle Harvey in Boca, Raton, mm-hmm. when we were talking about earlier. Yeah. He was the president. So them two basically put Hebrew National on the map. And my grandfather was the loudest motherfucker in the room. I mean, loudest colors. I mean, this guy, you heard this guy coming from a mile away, but not because of what he sounded like, but because of what he looked like. I mean, he would wear, he's a big guy, but he would wear the loudest colors, the craziest patterns, right? That was Ronnie Podkin, right? And he's died to the song My Way. Boy, did he make an impact on my life. And then these two diamonds, they're for my mom. So when my mom died, I didn't get any jewelry. My sister basically took it all. I don't know what she did with it, but I was given these two pairs of earrings. Who knows if they're real or fake? I really have no idea. The reality was, I said, I need them preserved and I need them to put in this chain, right? Because I'm going to wear it around my neck every day to remind myself of the two angels. I have three angels, including my grandma, but to remind myself of all that I've overcome. The passing of my mother, the passing of my grandfather, my grandmother, being adopted, you know, having to work 7-8 jobs. I'm not alone. There's other people that are going through this. And this is just a subtle reminder that I wear around my neck to remind myself that when the going gets tough, because boy, does it, you can overcome anything that's placed in your way with just a hard head and the ability to say, fuck it, why not me? And that's why I did it.
Mic drop.
That was good.
Mic drop. That was good. Very humble. You remind me of myself, man.
Thanks.
I'm happy we did this, man.
Dude, this was mad fun.
I'm happy we were able to sit down. We went all over the place, man.
Yeah.
And it was nice that we went from vape to the mental health space. I mean, you know, I don't think we've ever done that on a podcast episode here.
You ever have someone in a blue blazer on here before?
No. So, and I think you're onto something, too. Like, if the insurance doesn't work, you could do like Austin, the Blazer, Glazer.
Yeah, a lot of people have said that to me. You're not the first.
All right. Well, we'll go with that. Anything that you want to share with the listeners before we close out? And if not, please let us know where we can connect with you.
Sure. I would leave you with just be you. At the end of the day, your brand is everything. Just be you, be who you are, and just see what happens. Follow me on Instagram at Austin Glazer, and maybe buy some insurance for me if you're into it. Call me maybe. Thanks, Dave.
That's a great great song, man.
Yeah,
Carly Rae Jepsen, right?
Absolutely. She had one hit though.
I haven't heard of her.
Yeah.
Guys, hopefully you found some value in today's episode with Austin. We ask that you share this show. This show continues to grow, and it grows because of you guys. So we're very grateful for you, the listener, whether you listen to one or 179. You can shop the latest merch at nosnoozeshop.com. And until next time. Stop snoozing.
Get up and get after it.
Woo!
My man.
Nice.
That was fire.
That was great.
That My Way story.
Thank you guys for tuning in. That's another epi in the books. You can follow us on Instagram at No Snooze Podcast and leave us a 5-star review wherever you listen to us. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, No Snooze. Shop the latest merch at nosnoozeshop.com. Come on.